Hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. And getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is VBAC at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in. Hello, women of strength. We have a very, very special episode for you today. I am not sure if you've heard back in, I think, December, our family member Paige, she shared her maternal assisted cesarean, and it has inspired so many people. We've gotten so many messages about this option, and it's still kind of new out there into the world of podcasting and social media because it's still not really being done. But we have another maternal assisted cesarean story for you today. We have our friend Brianna, and she is just incredible. She's been actually with us listening to the podcast for so many years, and I just cannot wait for you to hear her story and how it all unfolded. She had 2 cesareans before she had her MAC, so MAC, maternal assisted cesarean. And it kind of all unfolded there in the end differently than she ever expected, but she was like so stoked, and I am so stoked. I am so proud of her for taking this role and making this change, especially in a small town. It's not an easy thing to do. So if you guys have ever wanted to know a little bit more about maternal assisted cesarean and what that might look like and just kind of the things that she had to go through to get there, you guys just dive in right now. And do not stop listening to this episode without going after and looking at her video on social media. You guys, so incredible. I just cannot wait. So Brianna, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to turn the time over to you in just a moment once we get done with the intro. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, so this is kind of lengthy, so hopefully I can keep it somewhat short and sweet. My story starts, I guess, in the fall of 2019. That's when I found out I was first pregnant. And within a week of getting that positive test, I ended up miscarrying at work. Aww. So that was a huge devastation, just a huge loss. We'd been married for about a year. And of course, that first baby, you're so naive. So you're just so excited and all the things and doing all the apps and all the stuff, even though at like 4 weeks pregnant. And so having those miscarrying symptoms at work. And then my husband was actually out of town. So that was rough.
Yeah. Did
And
you
I was
have
one of
support, like other support?
yes and no, because I was one of the first of my friend group to kind of have kids, and so none of them really understood or knew. Now, like what, 6-ish years later, now a lot of my friends have been through that as well. And so it's kind of nice being on the other side just to be able to support them, but obviously the club that nobody wants to be a part of. So that was super devastating. But because, and it had taken a few months for us to get pregnant in the beginning, so I was pretty determined not to stop trying. But then it was kind of interesting because the very next cycle, I had very similar symptoms. So it was about a month later. And as excited as I was so freaking terrified and anxious. And sure enough, it was a positive pregnancy test. And so all over again, that first week, I was just walking on eggshells. And even beyond that, now that I had been kind of traumatized that first time around, pregnancy wasn't just blissful anymore. It was.
I've heard that before, where people who have had a miscarriage before, it's like they can't even get into like the part of enjoying a pregnancy or being excited,
For sure.
which is so hard because it is such a beautiful, exciting time, but it also is very understandable because you're like, but I've already gone through this, so I can't get myself here right now.
And so, as excited as I was to tell my husband, I was just in tears, like after telling him that and waiting for that 8-week ultrasound. They would not see me until 8 weeks. So I was just freaking out for the first at least month. But all looked good. And this pregnancy was actually, she's my first daughter. So she just turned 5 last week. So with that being said, everything looked great on the 8-week ultrasound, but she was due August of 2020. So like so many other stories, March of 2020, the world kind of shut down, and that's where my first full pregnancy kind of fell apart too. I feel like I didn't have quite the support that I should have. Also, I live in a small town in central Minnesota, probably about 8,000 people. So our hospital is really little. And so they were navigating the waters just like anybody else. And all I would say the last half of my pregnancy, probably half of my appointments were virtual. So that
Very
was,
impersonal.
yeah. And just not even knowing what you don't know, and all the things with like blood pressure or glucose test or any of those types of things, just it was totally, totally different. Luckily, my pregnancy was pretty uneventful. But looking back, I was so uneducated and so underprepared for like labor and delivery because of that. So I mean, we did a virtual labor class, I guess, but it was like a outdated video probably from like the 90s. Like it was just not, it was
Like, wait,
not,
that's not today's hairstyle.
no.
I've seen those before, and you're like, why are you still playing this?
Yeah. So it was quite interesting, and just being first-time parents, it was a little bit overwhelming. But there's only one OB on staff at that time at that hospital. So the rest are family providers that do labor and delivery, or a handful of them did. So kind of fast forward to my 39-week appointment. My husband was waiting in the car because of the COVID restrictions. And during that appointment, the provider was doing like a position check and all the things, 39 weeks. I asked her to strip my membranes. It was August. I was hot. I was impatient. I was lonely. It was August of COVID, so nobody was doing anything. So I was like, let's just get my baby here. Well, as she was stripping my membranes, she's like, I think I feel fingers. And I was like, what? And she's like, well, sometimes baby has their hand up high, like by the head, all the things. And then she kind of gave me a weird look and she's like, I think we need to go to ultrasound. So we went to ultrasound, and those weren't fingers, they were toes, and she was breech.
Like with her feet down.
Yeah, like froggy position. And so her toes were by my cervix. And totally naive first time mom, I didn't realize I could just go home. Like I could go try other things. Now I know like there's so many other like natural interventions you can do for breech birth. There's even breech providers out there, but you know, like August of 2020, like there was no chance I was finding anybody that fast. So I basically panicked. This was a Wednesday. She said, Friday, we'll get you in for a C-section. I was like, listen, lady, I'm not going to be well until Friday. So can we do this like today? And she was like, well, we can try to flip her, but she didn't really sound very confident either. And so I was like, all roads were just leading to a C-section. So I'm like, let's just do this today. And she's like, how about tomorrow? I can get OR staff ready and all the things. So I just felt very like kind of pushed into it, but also so naive. Like I had no idea what my options were. At that time, my options were either flipper or C-section. And that was it. And
Flipper, and it didn't sound confident either, which
right.
I feel like is very discouraging when a provider's like, well, we can try, but it's like really not probably gonna work. And you're like,
Yeah.
why? Okay, do it. And then they also talk about like, it's really uncomfortable and it can really stress a baby. And then you're like, wait, hold on. This doesn't sound worth it to me, you know?
Right. And all the extra interventions and stuff too. I'm like, the why if I'm just gonna end up in a C-section? So I'm like, let's just go for it. So next day, Thursday morning, she was so sweet. She cleared her whole schedule, did the C-section for me. And I remember being in recovery over the weekend, and they had like a locum OB that came on staff, and he came around, and he was a Southern man, very insensitive in my opinion. And he came around and he woke me up from a nap and just made me feel like, why are you sleeping? And yeah. And so at that time, then he came to my bedside and asked me some questions, and I was so confused and so out of it. And he began talking about my next birth and how it was going to be a repeat C-section, and how next time we'll get you in at 39 weeks. We don't do VBACs at this hospital, that kind of a thing. And I was like, wait a minute. What did I just agree to? Like, where did this just send me? And like, in that moment, I realized kind of like I just set myself up for a fight, like for next time. And I didn't believe that that was going to be my fate. As soon as he said that, he walked out of the room, and I looked at my husband and I said, over my dead body, am I doing that again for no reason? Like, for reasons like that.
Just to
Like,
schedule for no reason when there's not a
yeah.
breech baby or there's not a medical concern.
Right. So I guess basically at that point, I felt very like in disbelief and pretty betrayed by the medical system. And so that's when I spiraled. Like, I will totally fully admit, and my husband will 100% agree. I like went down this huge rabbit hole. It was probably later that week, like in the midst of baby blues and all the things, I found your podcast and went haywire. Like, listened to so many episodes on that maternity leave. And then I drive a lot for work. So even beyond that maternity leave, I was listening to the VBAC link constantly. It consumed my life. And looking back, yes, it was probably a little bit unhealthy, but also it's what I needed at that time, just to hear that there were redemptive stories out there and non-redemptive stories too, because that's so true. And we didn't have any visitors or anything. Like, it was COVID. It was very, people didn't want to come around, or if they did, it was very like awkward, like doorway visits and things like that. So I had a lot of time on my hands. I watched that famous documentary,
Business
Business.
of being born, but
Yes. Yep. I watched that too, all the things. And so I said, next time is going to be different. I knew that if I needed a C-section, it was going to be on my terms and things like that. So yeah, that was baby number one, kind of in a nutshell. And then fast forward to August of 22. So about 2 years later, found out that we were expecting our second baby, and she was due April of 23. I was super hell-bent that I was going to get my VBAC. I went through all the motions. I found a new provider at a different hospital because my local hospital doesn't allow VBACs, and they deliver about triple the amount of babies annually. So I felt very good about that. And my provider at that hospital, she was a family practice doc, but she specializes in OB things, and she was allowed to do C-sections. So it was, but she was very, very VBAC friendly. She, from the get-go, she was like, you're gonna get your VBAC, and like she was very all about it, everything I needed. Hey, can you do a position check at 34 weeks? You know, like all the things that I needed, she was on it. So it was great. I did all of the things. I got a doula, I practiced hypnobirthing. My husband and I read the Bradley method. Like, yeah. I made a very flexible birth plan though. I had my doula kind of laughed at me because it was made on Canva, and it had three like induction, VBAC, like natural going into labor naturally, and a C-section birth plan. And luckily I made all three of them, because eventually, as time will tell, I ended up in another C-section. So I ended up At 38 weeks, I felt off at work, and there had been a few red flags prior. So I had had kind of some swelling, I'd had some dizziness, some floaters in my eyes, things like that.
Preeclampsia symptoms.
Yep, definitely red flags. So I talked with my provider a few different times. They ran some urine tests, they monitored my blood pressure, but it was never all three or four of the criteria that can nail down preeclampsia. But at that 38-week mark, I felt really off at work that day, and I work in a school, so I had the school nurse take my blood pressure, and it was high. It was higher than it had been, so 150 over 90s. So not awful, but not great. So I had an appointment the next day. I didn't really think much of it. I went in with some mild chest pain, and in the ER, they ended up doing another urine sample and blood pressure readings, and it was even higher than, of course, in the ER. So I was officially diagnosed with preeclampsia that evening, and I was a little bit irritated because I was like, I have been telling you people this whole time. And so it was just really frustrating. I was given the choice then that night to either go into a repeat C-section at 38 weeks or to do a TOLAC. And obviously, I opted
Induced.
for the TOLAC. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they began the induction, just low and slow Pitocin overnight. In the morning, nothing had really changed at all. They did start blood pressure meds to keep my blood pressure under control. They did a Cook catheter, which was the worst pain of my entire life.
Well, was it probably because your cervix was pretty posterior and not super open?
And it was, high and closed, like
Yeah.
firm.
So they were forcing a tiny little thing into a cervix that's not ready or, not open. Yeah.
And it was
It can be
excruciating.
pretty rough. Yeah.
And I've heard some people are okay with it, but I don't know. I would never suggest that to anybody personally.
Well, it really depends, I feel like, on that cervix placement. Like, I've had clients that are like 1 centimeter and their cervix is a little bit more anterior, still kind of facing back, but like a little bit forward and softer, and it's easier to go in, and it's not like poking something that's not supposed to be poked in general, right? But like that's closed and hard and not ready because they have to go in and around and then they're fishing for the spot. It can be very traumatic. It can be very easy. So it all
Just kind of
depends
depends
on
on where you're at.
where you're at. Yeah.
And at that time, I did have a doula, and we had talked about these different interventions, and that was something I was open to. They can't do the cervical ripening agents with, or at least this hospital wouldn't, with my previous C-section. So Cervidil, Cytotec,
Cervidil and Cytotec. Yeah.
they wouldn't do those. And so I was like, well, whatever is going to get me a little bit further. So did it, but it was not pleasant at all. I was able to keep it in for the recommended time. It put me at about 3 centimeters dilated, and they were able to take it out then. I don't think I've ever been more relieved in my whole life when they took that thing out. There was more Pitocin. They had to shut it off and turn it back on. I ended up having them cover the number of the units of Pitocin because I was so in my head about what number I was at because I wasn't really feeling anything, like no contractions or anything intense. I didn't feel like I was making progress. So I feel like I had that mental block.
Yeah.
So I ended up having them kind of cover those numbers because it was just too much. And I ended up seeing it at the end because they had to get doctor approval to keep going.
So it
And
was over 20.
when they took the sticky note off, I'm pretty sure it was at 38. And
Okay.
I wasn't really feeling a whole lot. So they shut it off, waited 12 hours, and then turned it back on. I
That's
did.
called a Pitt holiday, by the way. Taking it, shutting it off, letting all the receptors flush out of Pitocin, and then starting it back up again. A Pitt holiday, if you need to ever take one, you can request it
It
for
did not
anyone
feel like a
listening.
holiday.
Yeah, no. Yeah, definitely not a hol. It's not like a holiday break, but they call it a Pitt holiday. Like, yeah, taking a
Get to take a
break.
break. And I didn't realize that was a thing. So that was one thing. And I didn't really feel like I was ever prepared for how long an induction could take. And that was really eye-opening to me because I was like, okay, then I guess we're gonna wait. And all this stuff like kept stacking up in my brain, like, that's another intervention, that's another intervention. And so I was I was aware that I could be headed toward a C-section, but I also was very hopeful that we would start to make progress soon. Because when you're in the trenches of that, you don't want to get down on yourself because that mental, your mind-body connection is so real in that moment. And I just really tried to stay positive. But when the Pitocin was back on, I did start to feel some contractions, and I agreed to let my OB break my water at 4 centimeters. At that point, I was like, let's just get this going. Like, maybe that's what I need to like spark this Pitocin to go, which that was really anticlimactic for me. Some people say that it's like a huge gush. Mine was just a little bit. Like, it didn't feel like what I thought it would, which was so crazy. And even after that, my body still wasn't quite responding the way I had anticipated. So we were doing all the positions. I had excellent nurses at this facility. They were on it, like switching peanut balls and yoga balls and walking the halls and all the things. I was doing so much. But this went on for like 4 nights. So I was admitted Monday night, like around midnight. And then Thursday evening into Friday morning, I was finally like feeling like, wow, we're getting somewhere. At this point, my water had been broken, I think, for 12 hours, maybe. I did ask for an epidural so I could get some rest because I was really starting to feel those contractions. And I believe I was around like a 6 or a 7. So wasn't even quite into like full active labor yet.
But right there, right there.
Yeah. And so I was like, maybe if I can just get some rest, we can keep pushing. It was like I said, like midnight. It was middle of the night. I was super exhausted just from all day, like changing positions and doing all the things. But when they were doing the epidural, there was the anesthesiologist started doing the epidural. My doula was in front of me. My husband does not do well with needles and all the
Needles.
things. Yeah. So he stepped out in the hallway. My doula is also one of my really good friends. And so it was amazing having her there through all of this. But he was doing the epidural and he's like, let me know if you have this, this, or this going on. And
Sharp pain
it
on the
was,
right side, left side, all those things.
yeah. So I was sitting there and I was like, okay, sounds good. So bent my back, all the things. Started having contractions, so he paused for a minute and began again. And it was just a short time later, I had some of those symptoms that he was explaining. I had my ears were ringing. I couldn't hear anything. I started feeling super dizzy. I had that metal taste in my mouth. Like it was just went downhill really quick. So they laid me down, monitored my blood pressure. I had the absolute worst headache of my entire life.
Spinal headache.
I don't know. To this day, I don't feel like I have full clarity on what actually happened there, but
Yeah, it kind of sounds like it.
the epidural did not work. I could still feel everything. So they left me to lay there for a little bit. My headache was pounding and I had pain behind my eyes. It was really bad. I had light sensitivity. My OB came in. So this is again like midnight, 1 a.m. My OB came in and she looked at my blood pressure readings, and at that time it was 200 over 100. I was like, oh, that's why I have a headache. And so I'm laying
Yeah,
there.
maybe that's not a spinal, because sometimes a spinal headache shows up later too, but
Right.
yeah,
Yeah.
you're
And I don't know if it was just a stress response. Like I was just so
could have
stressed
been.
out that just skyrocketed. I'm not sure. But my OB was really, really sweet and so good. And she left it up to me. She came in and she's like, you know, I don't want to call it. She's like, but I'm just gonna let you have the option. And she like didn't even have to say the words. And I was like, you want me to go to a C-section? And she's like, if you want to, if you want to. And she's like, but know that it's not your fault, like all the things. And so that was hard to hear. But she left up to me. She gave me the ultimate power. And in that moment, I did feel very empowered that I made the call. And I did say, it's been a long week. I was admitted Monday. This was Friday, early morning. It was so emotional just being away from my first baby, all the things. And so I did opt for that C-section. And I said, you know, I'm not even pushing yet, and my blood pressure is this high. What is it going to look like? And I have this rocking headache. What's it going to look like in a few hours if I even make it that far? So we ended up going down to surgery. I had one stipulation with my OB. I said, my doula has to come in with me. I said, my husband
Good
and my
for
doula
you.
both
Good
need to
for
be there.
you.
And
Yes.
And she was like, I'll make it happen. So it
Awesome.
was so amazing having her there with me. She was able to take some pictures, like in the OR, and they didn't have an option for a clear drape. There wasn't any small talk in the OR like there was with my first C-section. It was a little bit more of an emergent, not emergency, but more urgent of a C-section than my previous one. So it was a different experience for sure. I was pretty out of it. She was born at 2:42 a.m. So I was pretty out of it, pretty just done. So then got up to recovery. My doula left. Surgery went great. She was tiny. She was 5 pounds, 4 ounces. So I was like,
Oh.
why didn't you just fly on out of there?
Yeah.
But she was otherwise healthy, really, really healthy. It was great. I didn't realize that they did this, but they weigh your placenta and put it on a percentile scale and all the things. It was only in the third percentile, and the cord wasn't even long enough for like my husband to cut in surgery. So she was just this teeny tiny little package,
Yeah.
which was, I remember her coming out and they weighed her and told me how much she weighed. And I was like, how in the world is she only that little when I am this big? Because I was so swollen from preeclampsia. I was like, only 5 pounds of this as a baby.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
How were you doing after that? Like, did your headache go away? Did your numbers get better? You know,
Yeah.
all that. That was your postpartum on that.
So we got up to recovery and it was about an hour. My doula had left. They ended up letting my husband cut the remainder of the cord. So they were doing that in the little isolate thing. And my nurse was doing some different things around the room. And I had told her, I said, I'm feeling nauseous and dizzy. And she was like, yep, I'll be with you in just a second. I'm going to finish up with baby. And I was like, no, I really feel sick right now. And she turned around and I could tell on her face that something wasn't right. And later on, she told me that I was like the color of the bed sheets. Like I was like white as a ghost. And at that time, I started like puking. She laid me down and turns out I was hemorrhaging.
I was gonna say, were you bleeding? We've seen that with one of our doula clients, and we just like watched the color like leave her face, and we were like, ah, something's not right. And she was hemorrhaging. Oh, so scary.
They laid me down, and it turns out I didn't actually lose all that much blood in the scale of hemorrhaging. But I do remember my blood pressure was just tanking. I was so sweaty hot. And my husband to
Right.
this day, like, doesn't let me live this down, but I was just ripping my gown off. And the nurses were like trying to keep me modest. And I was like, I
You're like, I
don't
don't
care.
care. I am hot. My body's not happy right now.
Yeah. They tipped me upside down and all the things. They kept reading my blood pressure numbers out loud, which was a little bit stressful for me. But the last one I remember them saying out loud, kind of in their emergency state, like there was a lot of staff in my room. The last one I remember them saying was 50 over 30.
Wow, so you
Yeah.
were 200 over 100, and now you're like on the complete opposite end of the scale.
Oh, yeah. So I was feeling like
Wow.
hot garbage after that. All said and done, they ended up getting me stable and good and everything and
Good.
on my way. But we were in the hospital for a very like a week, a little more than a week with that. And then it brought on all the anxiety when I went home, just with like, am I gonna have any like hemorrhage things happen
Yeah.
after that? And then preeclampsia, like, what does my blood pressure look like? Am I gonna
Yes.
go into a seizure? Like, all the things there where I was just a big ball of anxious emotions, basically. It was not very well for the, I don't really remember the first month or
Understandable.
two. Yeah, it's a huge fog. I don't remember a lot of my immediate postpartum with her, a month to 2 months, probably. It's very foggy. I was in my sister's wedding at 5 weeks postpartum with her. So breastfeeding in a bridesmaid's dress, all the things there too, where it was a lot. A lot, a lot. That
Yeah.
postpartum sucked. And on top of that, like not getting my redemptive VBAC that I had tried so hard for.
Yeah.
And my OB many times had like told me how it wasn't my fault. And it was just really hard to hear though, because it's like, how is it not my fault when I did all of the things?
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so
Totally. Yeah. It's hard because you're like, Well, whose fault is it then? Who can I blame? Because we naturally, as humans, I feel like we want to place some sort of blame or responsibility on something or someone, like in all things in life, not just childbirth. And I feel like it more naturally comes as a blame to ourselves in childbirth because we see it as, well, we carried the baby, we did this, this, and that. But it's not, right? We can't place the blame, but we do. We do. So try not
So
to.
true.
If you are listening, offer yourself some grace. You are an amazing woman of strength. And yeah, it's hard. I get it. Don't blame yourself. Don't blame yourself.
Yeah, there was just so much there too, like
Yeah.
especially when you do all the things and you know the cascade of interventions is going to lead.
Yes.
So then it's like in hindsight, you're thinking back to all these things and you're like, well, why did I allow her to break my water? Why did I do this? And just so much grief and so much like contemplation on like replaying what was right in that time. And so it took a lot of personal growth for me to like be okay with my decision and like move on from that. And so we didn't know if we were going to have a third baby. We didn't know if I wanted to go through all of that again. That
Yeah.
was really, really hard on all of us. Like that first couple
Yeah.
months of postpartum was just horrendous. And so it was really interesting making this decision of having a third baby, just in that, how in the world is this going to look? Because of course, I didn't want another C-section. I
Right.
wanted that VBAC. I want, and it's crazy because there's some women out there who are totally okay with having a C-section. Like even their first baby, they're like, "Oh yeah, my doctor said that I should do this, so I'm gonna do it." And I'm like,
Yeah.
"Why?" I
Yeah.
don't get it. But I mean, it's everybody's prerogative, and I've had to kind of come to that realization. But and I don't know what it is inside of me or many of the women that listen to this podcast, but you so badly want that vaginal birth and that magical birth experience that you've always pictured. And
Yeah.
when you don't get that, it's you do, you blame yourself and you have to turn somewhere to think of why it happened.
I don't know if you heard about our radical acceptance episodes that Julie and I did way back in the day, but that one, if anyone is listening and relating to this feeling, I highly suggest going back and listening to the two radical acceptance stories. And I'll even share, I share a spot in the second episode about something that happened to me. And like, I needed to know what happened. I needed to place blame. I needed it. You know, and sometimes there's like never anything we just never have the answer, you
I
know.
went on this huge like rampage when we were kind of going through, do we have another baby? Do we not? And I was kind of like wanting to wait and kind of like keep healing and things like that from this experience. And my husband's like kind of a now or never. And I'm like,
Yeah, you're like, and you're feeling pressure, and
yeah.
yeah. Taking a quick break to share more about digestive enzymes. For years, I have had digestive issues. I was told to take a digestive enzyme, and so I went on Amazon, checked out a few products with honestly great reviews, and quickly bought one. I figured they couldn't all be different, right? Well, similar to other supplements like prenatal vitamins, I have learned after starting Needed's digestive enzymes that they are not all alike. My belly has had issues for years, so I decided to get into the doctor and get down to the bottom of things. The doctor asked me to bring all my supplements in, and she wanted to review everything and told me to throw out some things. But when it came to anything that I brought from Needed supplements, she said, "Hold on to these and keep up with them." She was so direct. I said, "Okay." So I threw out the old digestive enzymes and continued taking Needed's. You guys, I really wish I could explain the difference I have experienced in taking these digestive enzymes versus the others. It's truly so cool to see. The bloat, digestive noise, my gas, yes, I'm talking about gas, has truly improved. I can't thank Needed enough for creating such a high quality digestive enzyme that helps me get radically better digestion. No matter what state of life you are in, you can likely benefit from taking digestive enzymes. Grab your bottle today and get 20% off with code VBAC. Visit thisisneeded.com and get 20% off with code VBAC. Okay, let's get back into today's show.
So I ended up going back and looking through all of the notes from both of my C-sections and all of the documentation on like the reasons and things. And of course, with my second birth, it was deemed failure to progress. Mm-hmm. And there was barely anything in there about the whole epidural experience. Barely anything.
And that's so frustrating because you're like, wait, hold on.
Yeah, that's why it was like, why failure to progress? Like I was like, but I was progressing. Yeah. It was just super slow.
Yeah.
And then my blood pressure spiked. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't preeclampsia. It was failure to progress. And I was like, so that just puts like a bigger stamp of like rejection of not getting what you were hoping for.
Well, and then for me, when I saw that on my records, I don't know how you would feel, so feel free to disagree with me. But for me, that is when I was like, wait, so it wasn't my fault, but then you just told me I failed.
Yep.
So you are blaming me? You know?
Or my body, at least.
Yeah, or my body, which, I don't know. There was a disconnect for me when I like read those op reports. And sometimes I find the op reports very healing because you're like, okay, like this is something different, but then also it can be very frustrating because you're like, no, I had preeclampsia. My blood pressure was here. I had this headache, you know, but you're telling me my body wasn't progressing. You know, it's just, I don't know. How would you relate that?
Yep, absolutely. And then I was like,
was it me?
Was it me? And then you just have this like constant devil's advocate in your brain. So yeah, my husband basically said now or never. And so I just did all the things all over again. I was like, okay,
now
I need to find a provider that can do a VBAC after two C-sections. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dang it. Like, where am I going to find that? Like I said, we live in small town, central Minnesota, even the bigger hospitals, 30 minutes around us, they're not likely to do that either. They're bigger, but definitely still not on board with that kind of a thing, or at least maybe selective providers will be. But then you run into the providers that are part of a group and you don't know which one you're going to get when labor and delivery comes around. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't being induced again. That was one thing. I was like, I will not be induced again. If I go 42 plus weeks, then I'm just going to opt for the C-section. But I was not going through the induction process again. That was too much. And ultimately probably why I hemorrhaged, because just the whole overload of Pitocin.
Tired, and your uterus is just like, I'm done.
Yeah. And that overload of Pitocin in your brain, just the after the whatever the Pitocin they give you after you give birth to clamp down your uterus. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not going to work if you've been maxed out on Pitocin for days on end. Mm-hmm. So I was not being induced again. We ultimately, obviously I'm here today. We decided to have a third baby. Found out I was pregnant in September of 2024, so not even a year ago.
Yeah.
It might even be a year almost to the week. Kind of crazy to think about. And she was due in May of 2025. We found out the gender on this one. We did not on the first two. So I just really didn't want many surprises this time around. So we found out the gender and she would make for our third baby girl. So my husband is quite outnumbered. I had a heck of a time finding a provider that would do that VBAC after two. And ultimately, in December, you aired Paige's maternal assisted C-section story.
Yes.
This pregnancy, I was just kind of hellbent that I was going to be more active. I was going to take better care of myself. My prenatals, I switched to needed.
Oh, yay. Did you love them?
Yes, I did. Oh. I loved them. I don't think I switched until probably 10 to 12 weeks. The previous two, I don't love taking pills. So I just did the gummies. Amazon, Target, wherever I could find them. I was like, whatever, better than nothing. So I started needed probably, I think, around 10-ish weeks. Loved them. And that was one of the few things that I changed this pregnancy. And it could just be calling from higher up that I didn't get preeclampsia this pregnancy. It could be whatever, but could be just coincidence. But the needed prenatal vitamins, and I took a baby aspirin this time around. Mm-hmm. So I started both of those early. Love them. I would definitely recommend to anybody moving forward. I think in my brain, I don't know if it was, like I said, could be coincidence, but I think that was huge in the health of my baby and myself throughout pregnancy. along
I
with.
believe in it. I believe in their product so much, like so much.
Yeah. After hearing the like sponsored ads from you guys and then also just doing my own like research in on their company and things, just I loved it. Definitely would recommend. With that said, I walked a ton this pregnancy. And so we ended up getting a treadmill and I would just crank on podcasts and walk all the time. And it's winter in Minnesota, right? So it's like 30 below zero. You can't walk outside, especially when you're 20 some weeks pregnant. So we got a treadmill and I was in my basement listening to your podcast and maternal assisted C-section Paige's episode came up and I was like, what? It's like,
What is
what
this?
is this? And then my wheels started turning and I was fascinated, like completely fascinated. I ended up listening to, I think her name is Natalie Elephants. It starts with
Yeah,
an
Dr.
E.
Natalie.
Yes, I'm going to butcher her last name, so I won't even say it, but she has a phenomenal Instagram page.
Yes, she
She's
does.
been on many podcasts, things like that. So I listened to Paige's whole story, watched like the media attachments that you guys have had, like the video and things like that. Incredible, completely incredible. But it was in Korea. And I was like,
Yes.
I don't think I'm going to be able to have this in small town central Minnesota. Like, how in the world is this going to work? So it's like, well, my provider was super supportive last time. I was like, I'm going to run it by her. So I had my, I don't know, it must have been like a 16-week appointment or something. Had my appointment with her and I ran the maternal assisted C-section by her. I brought the resources. I had Paige's information like in my head and I brought it up to her and she just told me that it wouldn't work, like flat out. And I knew that going into that appointment, I prepped myself for it. I was like, she's gonna say no, but the worst she can say is no, right? So I was like, I have to try. So I ran it by her. I told her what it was. She'd apparently never had heard of it, which I didn't either, but she's in the medical world. So I thought maybe she would know. Never heard of it. This hospital also, remember, didn't allow the clear drape with my second birth. So I was like, okay. She said that it would break the sterile field. The risk of infection was too high. They'd have to develop a policy. I offered, I said, can I help write the policy? Can
Yeah,
I?
let me be
And
part of this.
right. And I work in, I'm an occupational therapist. So I mean, I have a master's degree. I know how to write some of these things, grant writing, all the things. So I was like, I could help do this. I would gladly do it. Well, it just didn't, she wasn't really, she
Entertained
didn't,
at all, huh?
no. And so I was like, okay. And so I left that appointment in tears. And she was like, we can put baby on your chest right away, like if that's what you want, because I'd never had that slimy baby on my chest. So I didn't ever really know what that feeling of like, I did it, like she's here. Like every C-section, they wrap them up and they stick them by your face. And they're like, your baby's here. And you're like, I feel great right now. And so much of that surgery, it always feels like they're happening to you instead of like with you. And you guys have said that countless times on this podcast. And that's so true. Like, I just felt like these surgeries were to me and I wasn't a part of it. Like I said, the first one, there was small talk in the OR and things like that. So she was not entertained by that option of a maternal assisted C-section. So it was then I had, at that same facility, I had my 20-week anatomy scan scheduled. And I was like, I'm just going to finish out this anatomy scan and I'm just going to keep looking for maybe a provider that maybe will do a VBAC after two then. So I was like, I'm just going to keep going with this, which switching providers for me was a serious deal because I felt very connected to that provider. And so I felt almost like I was betraying her or.
Look at that. I totally get it.
Yeah. And I had such a personal connection with her. So I was so torn. I was like, do I just find another provider or do I just stick it out and I get what I get? Lo and behold, that provider had a baby around the same time I did. So she was going to be out anyway.
Oh my
So I
goodness.
wasn't going to have her regardless. No matter how I had this baby, I likely was not going to have my provider. And that's important to me. Like I said, I didn't want that like physician group where you just kind
Random
of
Joe
get,
Schmo.
yeah, I didn't want that. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll just keep looking. I was probably 18 or 19 weeks, and my boss was like, she had had a baby the year before, and I had told her kind of my woes and all the things, and she was like, I think my OB would do it. I think she would do the maternal assisted C-section. And I'm like, I don't know. I was like, I feel very discouraged. Like, around here, you can't find super open doctors to that kind of stuff. They're held by all these liabilities with the hospitals and yada, yada, yada. She suggested meeting with her. And so I did. I made an appointment, and this provider was out of Crosby, Minnesota, which is kind of by Brainerd. It's still central Minnesota, but it's about an hour from where I live. And I just wanted a meet and greet. It wasn't even like an OB appointment. I just showed up and wanted to chat, which is the weirdest doctor's appointment ever, in my opinion. There wasn't like a purpose necessarily for being there, except for like just to talk it out.
Yeah, get the feels.
Yeah, and I've never done that before, so it was very out of my element. But I ended up making the appointment. I was running late by like 15 minutes. I hit a train that got stuck on the tracks. And so I was at that point, I was like, I should just go home. Like, I took PTO this like the rest of the day. I should just go home and call it a wash. Like, she's gonna say no. Like, it's not even worth it. And I'm so glad I ended up making the drive. I showed up. I said, I'm so sorry I'm late. I hit a train. Nothing I could do about it. If you can't see me, I totally get it. And she made it work. They saw me shortly after that. I didn't have to wait very long. Went in, and I left that appointment with this doctor. Her name is Dr. Jennifer Tessimer-Tuck, and she is kind of a trailblazer. She's kind of a wild woman. Crosby has a population of about 2,000, 2,200 people, so even smaller than my hometown. This hospital is even smaller than my hometown's. They have a pretty good reputation, though, and I, like I said, I was not feeling optimistic, and I went in there, and she, I said, "What do you think of a maternal assisted C-section? I'm looking at switching providers. You're a little further away." And she let me kind of carry on for a minute, and she goes, "I just did one of those 2 weeks ago." Yeah, my mouth dropped. I was like, "Nah, you did not." And she goes, "Yeah, kind of same situation. I had a mom that was having a TOLAC, and she asked if she could deliver her baby in her C-section, and we made it work." And I was
Oh my
like, "Wait, you don't have a policy for this?" She goes, "Well, not yet, but I'm developing one right now."
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That just gave me the chills.
I was like,
Like, I love hearing stuff like this. Like, not yet, but I'm gonna have one.
I know. And I was so excited. I left that appointment. I'm tearing up right now. I left that appointment in tears, but totally the opposite reason. I was like, holy crap, this is actually central Minnesota, tiny little
Something that
town.
can happen.
Yeah, I was like, I just couldn't even believe it. It was completely unreal. She also actually asked that if I wanted to have a VBAC after two C-sections.
Oh.
And I was like, you know? And I thought about it for a little while. This provider only works select days at this clinic. And I was like, the chances of me going into labor on my own, because remember, I wasn't being induced, it just didn't feel likely that I was going to get a VBAC after two. And after everything I had been through with my second birth, I was really teetering
Needed a
on,
healing experience,
yeah,
probably. Yeah. A
and we knew this
planned
was our
healing
last.
experience.
Yes. And I am very type A. I have a lot of anxiety, all the things. So I think that maternal assisted C-section, after she had said that was an option, I was like, I think I'm in. I think I want to do that. And in a different way, it was totally redemptive and healing, and not what I had bargained for initially. Like, it was just such a 360, like, whoa, how did I swing from this way to this way so fast? So I went back to my original provider at my anatomy scan at 20 weeks, and she walked into my appointment, and she goes, "Brianna, what do you have going on here?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "You have appointments like at all these different places." And I was like, "Oh, you can see that." I was like,
How can she see that? That's
"Well,
interesting. The systems
the
are
systems are connected somehow." So she could see my appointments at the Crosby
put together.
Hospital. So I was like, "Well, I found a provider that's willing to do a maternal assisted C-section." And then she kind of backpedaled a little bit, and she's like, "Well, we probably could do it And I'm like, no, I don't even want to go there. Like, that's already.
We probably could. No.
Yeah.
Love you, but I'm closing this chapter.
Yeah. So I was like, no, I can't. I don't even want to, you're not even going to be here. So I'm going to have to fight with another provider to maybe make a policy and to do all the things. And I'm like, I don't want to battle that. And I was already 20 weeks pregnant and switching providers. And I'm like, who does this? Obviously, a lot of women do, but not me. So I'm like, what is happening? She did ask that I send her information on maternal assisted C-sections at that appointment. So over the patient portal, I ended up sending her the link to your podcast with Paige's episode. I sent her the video that Paige references on the I think,
On the YouTube video that she showed Dr. G.
Birth of Betty.
Yeah, I think I know. Yeah, she showed her provider, right?
Yes. I looked, if you listen to Paige's episode, she references it in there, and I sent that to her as well. I sent her a few journal articles that I had access to on maternal assisted C-sections and the outcomes, maternal outcomes afterwards. But I have not gone back to see her since that appointment. So I'm not sure where her heart landed on any of this or what happened at that hospital after I left. But I just hope that I was a catalyst of change for that hospital, with them realizing that a hospital not too far away was willing. Hopefully they can,
Smaller hospital.
yeah, hopefully they can change some of their policies or like get clear drapes in the OR or just have more options for moms that way.
Good for you.
So yeah, it was kind of crazy. I ended up seeing Dr. Tess Mertuk for the rest of my pregnancy after that, and her colleagues. I have to give a little shout out to her nurse practitioner, Harley, and then one of her other physicians she works with, Dr. Lindberg. They were all phenomenal. Like, all of them were super supportive, listened even throughout my pregnancy. I, for personal reasons, didn't want to do the glucose test, and she was totally okay with just me taking my blood sugar every, what, how many hours for 2 weeks and recording numbers and things. She was very, very supportive of pretty much anything I wanted during that pregnancy. And I can't say enough. I felt supported in my first two pregnancies by my providers, but not to this degree. And it's really wild when you find that provider that you really jive with, how big of a difference that makes in
Your
everything.
entire pregnancy, the whole experience.
Everything. Yeah. At my 37-week appointment, I found out that the policy had passed at this hospital for maternal assisted C-sections. So I was a little bit walking on eggshells up until then because I was like, what happens if it
They
gets
say
pulled out from under me?
no.
Yeah. Or what happens if she's not working that day and I end up with another provider that doesn't want to do it? So I was kind of walking on eggshells there for a while, but at 37 weeks, I found out the policy passed. Every provider at that hospital can do it with per their comfort, of course, but they can do it. And so on baby day at 39 weeks exactly, I was their first maternal assisted C-section under the official policy. And that was just May 16th. So my baby girl just turned 3 months old last weekend as of this recording.
Gosh.
So there's a few things that I wanted cleared that they were kind of, I mean, it's their first one, right? Like, so the big wigs were there, making sure that everything ran smoothly. I don't know their official titles, but it was like a surgical coordinator, some people on like the board. Like, there was some big people there for that hospital just to make sure that it all ran smoothly. They allowed my doula to be in there again. So my husband and that same doula got to be there, which this time I felt so much more confident and supported. So I don't know if I needed her like I needed her in my second birth, but it was a different type of need.
Yep, needed her
And
differently.
yes, and it was amazing to have her there again. She actually was the one that took really good photo and video for us. And she again got to be one of the first people to hold my baby. So that was really, really cool. So basically how the whole thing went, they brought me into the OR. My husband and doula waited in the hallway. They had all their surgical wear on. They brought me in. And I mean, by your third time around C-sections, I feel like you know what's coming, but it's still pretty anxiety provoking, especially after having blood pressure issues and having a spinal. Your blood pressure can just roller
Tank,
coaster and tank and come back and all the things. So they did the spinal, did the catheter. My anesthesiologist, she was so funny. She was also like their head anesthesiologist. It wasn't just like a nurse anesthetist. It was like an actual, the big wig one. So they were all like, wow, you even have her here. And I'm like, I didn't ask for her, but cool. She was a short little Asian lady and she was so funny and so sweet. And she gave me a play-by-play during surgery. She was very, very informative, almost too much at times, but she was kept letting me know, like, I'm giving you medicine for your blood pressure. And I'm like, okay, I don't need to know that, but thanks. It was their first maternal assisted C-section. So they laid me down and she ended up putting that pulse oximeter on my finger. Well, then when they went came to scrub me in for surgery, my OB was like, nope, she can't have that on her finger. And the nurse, the anesthesiologist,
Anesthesiologist.
yeah, she looked at me kind of like, why? And then she's like, oh, you need your hands. And I'm like, yep, I do. So they put the pulse oximeter on my ear.
I was gonna say, did they clip it on your ear?
Yeah. And then they put a gown on me, like a surgical gown. They did like a really strong gel of some sort on my hands to like hand wash, and then surgical white gloves that went like almost to my elbow. And then they had me lay just like on Paige's story, they just kind of have you lay with your arms up in the air so that way you don't touch anything. And then they had the surgical drape and a clear drape, and they were kind of like layered on my chest. And so they still wanted a drape for after baby came out. And then, so I just laid there with my hands up in the air, drape on my chest, and then they began prepping me for surgery. They had my husband and my doula come in at that time, but it happened so quickly. I'm still like reeling from it, honestly. I feel like I didn't even have time to like process that we were birthing our baby.
Starting.
Yeah, before they were like, she's here, kind of a thing. So I had my hands up in the air. There's like a ring. It's like a surgical ring that they put on your belly. And then they had me rest my hands on that. And I would say within a matter of seconds, she said, you can look down and see your baby. And so I mean, as best as you can laying on your back with a belly, I like
Little
lifted my,
crunch.
yeah, do a little crunch to like look up. And she was looking at me. And so they cleared her head and her shoulders. And then I was able to put my arms or my hands under her armpits and then pull her up and onto my chest.
Oh my
And
gosh.
while I had drapes, remember, all over my chest, so I couldn't feel that slimy baby at that point. Having her that close to my face and me actually holding her in that moment, I can't even describe it to you. It was completely incredible. I would imagine that's what people feel when they get their VBAC. And I just laid there and cried and cried and cried. And they gave it that minute. And we had not talked about this, but Dr. Tessmer Tuck said, all right, are you ready to cut the cord? And I thought she was passing the scissors to my husband, but then she grabbed my hand through my tears and like, I cut her cord.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh, I'm like doing the full thing here. Like, okay. So I ended up cutting her cord. At that time, they did take her for a minute to put her in the warmer so they could take my gloves and everything off of me and put the drape up. As soon as that was done, they immediately returned her skin to skin. And it was kind of funny because the baby nurse before surgery, she was like, we're going to take her to the warmer. They were explaining this process to me. And she's like, we'll put a diaper on her and then we'll bring her back to you. And I was like, I don't want a diaper on her. And they're like, oh, well, what if she poops? And I'm like, then
We don't care.
she poops. I don't care. Like, this is what everybody else, do you put a diaper on when you have a vaginal birth and you do skin to skin right away? Like, no, it's the same. So I think the baby nurse kind of felt like not needed. Like she didn't know what to do with her hands. She was so sweet and so, so good, but you could tell she was kind of like, what do I do
I
now?
feel like I need to be doing something.
Yeah. And I'm like, you can just hang
You can
out.
just
Like,
watch this beautiful
yeah.
moment.
Yeah. But I was able to hold her for like the rest of surgery, skin to skin then. And I have some pretty incredible pictures of her like laying on my cheek and like wrapping her arms around my neck and all that super, super sweet newborn feeling. The whole room was like buzzing when I had pulled her out. And that was like, and I don't, maybe it was just me envisioning this, but it was like the whole room like exploded with like cheers
happiness.
and happiness. And they were like, she's doing it. Like, we are doing this. And I think that like the surgical team felt so accomplished as well, because it was just something that isn't offered many other places. And they could see how important it was to me. And so I thanked them after surgery that this wouldn't have been possible without them and without their staff fighting for this. Their surgical board is made up of, I mean, the good old boys, it seems like. And so I think it was a little bit tricky to navigate those waters. But like I said, that OB, she's a pretty big trailblazer. And I think she knows what she's doing, and she practices in other countries. So I think that also,
yes,
I think that helps.
Yes, absolutely.
She's not just tunnel vision to central Minnesota, you know?
Yeah. She sees that other places do it differently, and sometimes it's better.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where the U.S. needs to get, because we're just like in this tunnel, like, this is what we do. This is what we've done for years. This is how it will always be. And then there are providers that go out of different countries, and not even people who go out of countries, but start seeing things differently. There's people like you who are like bringing these topics up and like, hey, did you know there's another type of experience that someone can have? And it takes certain people and certain providers to start getting those wheels turning. And I think through time and people like you sharing your stories and inspiring other women of strength and sending podcasts like yours to providers and pages like to providers and Dr. Natalie's, you know, it will change. It will change, but we got to keep going. Mm-hmm. We got to keep going. And I love that you were able to be part of this and that your team is like advocating and has been able to see things, because they are changing that little tiny community, you know, so
for
much.
Sure. For sure. And drawing in people from other areas, like, it's not just their tiny little 2,000 people town that they're impacting with that.
And she even offered a VBAC after 2 cesarean, which is like a whole other conversation within a small hospital.
Yeah.
A small little hospital, you know, like people who have open minds and want to hear what the patients want for their birth experience. Those providers are incredible and will change this world.
Right. And I don't know how close to retirement she is, but I get nervous with, I feel like it comes with experience that you, as a provider, are able to see that these things are so important because you've witnessed time and time again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think her having so much experience, and even like worldly experience, I think just opens her eyes to so much more. And so I'm glad that the policy passed at that little hospital, because I don't know how many more years she'll have, you know, at that hospital. So it's kind of cool.
Hopefully through her work, she's also showing other people coming after her that this can be possible and they can carry it on and not stop. Because I do know that there are providers that do think, like, we have a provider here who's probably near retirement too, and he'll do like bridge births and VBAC after 3, 4, you know, like very rare find.
Yeah.
And I hope that through other like people seeing what he's doing, that it will inspire and carry and kind of bleed into this like next generation of providers, instead of like stopping there.
Yeah. You know, kind of like that butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, I mean, just that incredible wave of peace and comfort that came over me. Like, I felt so redeemed. I felt
that.
It was amazing. Like, and I finally came to my body didn't fail.
No.
Like, after this third birth, I finally felt like my body didn't fail me. And I was able to get like that magical birth I dreamed of. It didn't look anything like what I had pictured in my brain at all. Not even a little, actually. And I would say like my birth trauma and that grief that came with, especially my second birth, I wouldn't say it's gone, but it's a lot quieter. And this is my, like I said, this is my last baby. So it just feels incredible to end on this note.
A high note.
Yeah. And to like think back on just this entire journey.
Oh, I'm so happy for you.
Thank
So
you.
happy for you. And so proud of you. Like, so proud of you. It also could have been very easy for you to, when your other provider's like, well, maybe we could try, because you had that personal connection, you had that relationship, and it was already very difficult for you to even think about going this other direction. So when
Oh
a
yeah.
provider that's like got that relationship, it could be easy to be like, really? Okay. But you followed your heart and your gut, and you were like, I love you, but I'm gonna go over here. Like,
Absolutely.
I need this. And that can be very, very difficult. And I feel like it's so extra hard when we're pregnant. That's why,
Oh
one lot of times why
yeah.
we're talking on this podcast saying, like, try to find your provider before you're pregnant, because our hormones are extra just high and different. And, if you can, that's great. But also know that, just like Brianna, like, it's okay to change. And like she said, like, who does this? People don't do this. Like, I don't do this. But then you did. And it
Yeah.
was so, worth its weight in gold
For
by
sure.
making that decision. And I want to remind this community, these women of strength, like, it isn't easy to change a provider. It's not. Like, emotionally, it can be very difficult, but it is so worth it if it feels worth it to you. Like, if your mind at all is questioning, it's okay to veer in a different way, go on a different path. It's okay, and it's worth it. And I feel like there can be sometimes a lot of regret if we don't follow our gut. I know I had regret when I was thinking I should change providers, but didn't.
Yep.
Any suggestions to our community as someone who has done that and not someone who would normally do that?
I think you also need to have a supportive network behind you as
Yes.
well, and not just your provider. I think like my husband, like I said, he doesn't do well with needles. He's not in the medical field. So I think with me being so hell-bent on like my decisions and what I wanted and things, it was crucial that he be on board too.
Yes.
And so I can't thank him enough either, because without his support, I don't think I would have made a lot of these decisions. Because if those that you love are and that are going to be there for the birth aren't supportive, you're just filling your whole hospital room with doubt, basically.
Yeah.
So I think having that network behind you, I will say that I kept things pretty private while this was all happening. So switching providers was one thing, but also when I decided for a maternal assisted C-section, I told a few people, and especially some people at work, because I had switched to my boss's OB, but I kept that pretty on the down low because I didn't want people to be like, you're crazy, like you're gonna get infections, or like just the shaming or the doubt there too, just doing something that's out of the norm. I think not being afraid to do something like that, but also doing what you need to do to shut out those opinions because their opinions aren't yours.
I know, and they can impact yours. I did the same thing with my VBAC after two cesarean when I switched providers and was going out of the hospital.
Yeah.
I knew people would not approve, and I knew people would say horrible, horrible things. And sometimes even the people that I thought were in my space, they did say horrible things. You
Yep.
have to protect your space, and it's okay. It is okay. My personality is like, if you've been listening to me for the years, like, I just kind of like say stuff. I just like, I'm a very open person. I share a lot. There is no TMI when it comes to me. I overshare. I'm an overshare. But so it felt very weird to like reel it in and like keep this like very, very close to my heart. But that's what I needed to do to protect my space. And you need to do whatever that is to protect your space. Let the people that are going to rally and cheer you on in your space, and that you feel safe with, and then aren't going to come and be like, oh, I just heard this horrible story. And it's like, nope. And that even meant my mom for a little bit. Like, it
Yep.
was really, really hard. I couldn't, and my husband's family, like, I didn't share any of that. In fact, I was doing dual care, and I was like leading them to believe, yeah, I'm going over here to this hospital, when I wasn't. And I felt like
Yeah.
a liar, but I was like, no, I'm protecting my space. And I loved that, like, my doulas and those few friends and my husband were like, no, this is okay. It's okay. You don't need to feel like you need to share everything. I know it's
But
not.
that was that supportive network that you had.
Yep, my supportive network. And I kept them really close. And man, I will cherish them for seriously every single day.
Absolutely. And I just think that that's so important, just protecting your space and having that supportive network. I don't think that you can have a successful birth experience, or at least I shouldn't say that. I should say it is unlikely to be that lucky to have a successful birth experience if you don't have those things. So,
And you're worth it. Fight for what you need, for what feels right. Like if you feel like you need a doula, hire a doula. If you know, whatever that is, if you feel like you need to change, change. Like you're worth it. So
and that being said too, sometimes C-sections can't be avoided. That's another like bullet point of my story. I wish that I could have drilled that into my head after that second birth. I wish that I would have taken my own advice. I don't think that that C-section could have been avoided.
There's grace too. Like offer yourself grace and know that like sometimes things unfold in ways that we didn't anticipate.
Right.
And you know, that does happen, but you are still amazing. We have a couple blog we have a blog about like how to recover and heal mentally after a birth that didn't go as planned. There's an amazing book, How to Heal a Bad Birth. And that doesn't mean like your birth was bad. It's just the
Right.
title of the book, but it talks about like experiences that were like less than ideal and how to heal from them. They're just so amazing. We have some EMDR. We have a therapist that talks about EMDR therapy and working through that. And sometimes that all has to be done before you even get into the next chapter of having a new baby, too. Lots of work to do, no matter what type of birth you have or have had. It's an amazing thing what we do and how our experiences unfold can impact us and can change us forever. And I feel like you, without knowing you more than just this very short period of time, I'm gonna guess you've been changed forever.
Absolutely. I can't even describe it to you. It feels like a weight has been lifted and I finally feel at peace. And it's really fun talking to other people who are either pregnant or maybe they have some birth trauma or things, and not divulging my entire story because some people are protecting their space and I don't want to fill their head with my story. But I think that talking with expecting moms or things like that, it's fun to be able to give them some of these pieces of advice. Like there's medical reasons for C-sections, and not all C-sections are unwarranted or things like that too. Yeah, overall, I feel like my life forever will be changed in the birth world, and I'm still obsessed with birth. It's still fun to listen to these podcasts, and it's still fun to reminisce with other people about their experiences. Probably why
Absolutely.
you're still here today.
Yes, I know. Birth carries on. It's just so amazing. And the more you hear stories, the more you feel inspired and uplifted. So keep sharing your story. Keep
I
sharing
will.
your story and inspiring people. And thank you so much for coming on today and sharing this beautiful story, well, stories with our amazing community.
Thank you, Megan.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey, hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. and getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is V-B-A-C at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in.